We're back at the races, 5 minutes into hour two on this Tuesday, and the voodoo in the steward stand on Saturday had people up in arms. Andy Serling joins us from the New York Racing Association. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. And this is a fascinating topic. You've discussed the herding issues for years. And you know what? If they're going to call it like this on a regular basis, I think we'd all be happy, right?
I don't know if we'd all be happy. I would be. I mean, obviously you're referring to the Jocko Gold Cup, which I assume your listeners know. Yeah, I mean, I think that in general, I've always felt that our stewards were consistent, and I think those, you know, constant calls for consistency are more of a, you know, it's a sort of a more Twitter fantasy. But not in this one. I mean, at least to me, I feel as though I've seen very, very similar ones to this constantly not get adjudicated. Where in this case, they took the horse down. I don't have any problem with the DQ. I think the Code of Honor would have won the race if that horse hadn't deliberately come out. And I was surprised they didn't give Irad Days, because this one seemed like it was Irad. I mean, I don't know how you can say that Vino Rosso deserved to come down and it wasn't the rider that was doing it, because clearly he was coming out. I mean, that's what they do. I'm not blaming the riders, by the way. The riders are trying to win. The riders are trying to do what they can to win within the rules. They obviously don't want to get disqualified, so it's not like they're trying to break rules in doing what they do. But the stewards have allowed them to get away with this consistently. And Irad herds a lot. Javier Castellanos, a herder. John Velasquez is one of the best herders I've ever seen. He's a little more subtle, maybe, than some of the others, and that's why he gets away with it. But they all get away with it, to be honest. And they're trying to win. So I don't criticize a rider for doing what he can to win. He's only trying, he or she are only going to try to play within the rules and what the stewards let him get away with, because their job is to win for the bettors, the owners, the trainers, everybody. So I don't knock a rider for doing what the stewards have allowed them to get away with. In this case, I would say Irad was doing what they've sort of been allowed to get away with. In this case, they said that they felt it crossed the line. I guess some could compare it to the Dr. Edgar DQ up in Saratoga at the end of 2018. I don't think that one was much more egregious than this. I just like the stewards to be very clear and stop the herding. I mean, there's that race. I'm not sure, but it might have been the first race that day we ran 13, but I'm not sure that was the day. Actually, it probably wasn't, because I think it was actually on TV for that. It was the first race. Where Irad took a horse out and herding to the far outside rail. This misnomer that there has to be contact for herding to have cost a horse a victory, to me, that's really problematic. Horses, I like when they say both horses were drifting. They're not both drifting. Horses are herd animals, and if a horse inside them is coming out, it's going to cause the other horse to come out. The riders know that. So they're moving out and moving the other horse out. There doesn't have to be contact. They're moving them out. And I think that's something that needs to be understood, that contact isn't the issue. The issue is a horse being sort of drifted out by another horse to prevent it from keeping its form of momentum going. And we see this a lot. And I'd love to see it, you know, permanently stopped. I think it would be better for the game. I think it would be safer. And I don't know why every time they come in, you know, you see the riders coming out 4 and 5 past to meet their challenger. When did this start? And it just seems like keep a straight path. I think that's a big thing in Europe, isn't it? But keeping a straight path?
It's a standard. If you're on the rail or in the two path and there's a horse rallying out in the you know, 3, 4, 5 path, there is a school of thought that says it's important that your horse be able to see that somebody's coming. So moving out a little bit, I get, you know, in terms of eyeballing. Yesterday I forgot to say this, because I wanted to say, if you're driving a car, because this is something everybody can understand, who, Andy, has not been in the car when a guy abreast of you or just slightly in front of you starts to drift over into your lane. And, you know, for a second, you move over a little bit and then you honk at a certain point and let the guy correct his path. It's no different. There's nowhere for the horse to go if a horse is constantly leaning in front.
Yep. And it's more noticeable when it happens when a horse is coming in, because most of the time you've got a rail situation, a horse stands steady, where they're not necessarily steadying outside. I mean, what do I think? I think you just deliberately steer your horse a little inside so the horse slams into you. And then the students say, well, you steer him inside. Well, I did it because that horse was coming out into me. And I saw actually a horse that did that get disqualified. That was the one who was being herded. So a number of years ago, it was a Rick Violet horse at Aqueduct. And it was just a complete misunderstanding of what was actually going on the racetrack by the stewards. This is a long time ago, so I'm with different people in the booth. But to me, it's a failure to sort of understand the nature of the way horse racing is run. And I think we'd all be better served if they just get away. They did whatever they could to stop the herding. There's one thing, like you say, that, you know, horses four paths outside, you come out a couple paths to get near them. That's not intimidation. But in the majority of cases, it's not riders who are coming out so their horse can see them. It's the majority is they're doing it to intimidate to their advantage. And they get away with it. They're doing the right thing if, in fact, it gives them an advantage because they're trying to win. I don't blame the riders here at all. I really don't. I really think that they're doing what they have been told is okay. I'm not sure it's okay. To me, it's not okay. Yep. To me, it's not. To me, it's an unfair advantage. It's potentially dangerous. I don't like it at all, and I've been outspoken against it for many, many years. And I've watched it happen all the time, and it's just not adjudicated. I played Gallop Racer, right? Easiest way to keep a horse is going to go by you, just to continually herd him out, right? You know, it's the same thing. I'm sorry. I know it's a video game, but it's not really different racing.
No.
So in this case, you know, I think the right call was made.
Surprised it was made.
You know that it's very likely that somebody stands on very weak ground when they say the horse was never going by. Mm-hmm. Well, how can they know that? And I like some people saying in this case, he had already gone by. So he was not never going by. He actually already had. So I think that in all likelihood, you can never, just like you say, there's never going by. You can't be certain that Code of Honor is going to win. And I have no dog in this fight at all. My doggy was passionately stopped running the second Jose Ortiz looked behind him. Watch the race. Jose Ortiz looks behind him and passes is empty. I mean, it's just like, how often does that happen? So
it's the worst.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, I'm not complaining here. I'm, you know, I'm happy to see Code of Honor win, you know, but it's not like I was against Vino Rosso. So, I was surprised they made the change. In reality, I think the right horse was put up, and Code of Honor's gotten very good. Vino Rosso's a little tough to read. Obviously, he improved as a 4-year-old. But a little inconsistent. But Code of Honor is probably the best 3-year-old out there. You know, it is sort of funny that a couple of very big races involving him resulted in DQs, but that doesn't make them wrong. Just because they happen doesn't mean it's Code of Honor's any worse or any better or whatever. He just think he ran a winning race, and in this case, the stewards put him up. I don't really have a problem with the DQ. I just didn't think they'd take him down because they normally don't in these situations. I didn't think it was the wrong call. I just thought it was not the call they would normally make.
Well, and that's what and that's what I was taken with, because when it happened, I thought, he's really interfered here with, but they'll never take him down. And then when they did, I was shocked. I was like, wow, if they're going to do this, great. By the way, I want to reiterate. I don't know if I said this yesterday. I said it on Twitter. Because I wanted to remind people. I saw people say some.
People said dumb things on Twitter? I'm shocked. Not the Twitter I know.
That's not my Twitter. let me
there's
remind
somebody,
people.
There's somebody right now saying a lot of dumb things on Twitter. But anyway, I digress.
It's a 24-hour mechanism. I want to remind people, I see people attacking and saying, this is an embarrassment for NYRA. NYRA installs one steward. The New York Gaming Commission employs one steward, and the Jockey Club employs one steward.
Well, obviously, people get that wrong all the time, but the nature of the business, so we're going to get blamed for a lot of stuff that we don't particularly do, which is fine. I mean, occasionally we get credit for things that we have nothing to do with, like good weather in Saratoga, but I'm not sure how that calls an embarrassment to anybody.
I don't really get that one,
and that whole thing. It's, you know, there have been, you know, I thought last year in Saratoga, not in 2018 Saratoga, when they put up, there was a Chad Brown who was finished third, and they put him up from third to first. I have no idea how Grand Motion Source to finish second was considered a culprit in that. I think that was a very difficult call to defend. And I had bet the horse who won, who finished first, at 25-1. I thought that was a very legitimate takedown, so I didn't have a problem with that. But I have no idea why they considered the other horse culprit.
I remember that. That's right. I forgot about that.
Well, that's not a call. That was the wrong call. But listen, you know, it's okay to disagree.
Well,
there's people
you
that
also,
think that a presenter's first going to come down and think I'm wrong about that. I don't know. I don't particularly agree with that. But, you know, it's okay. It's horse racing. There's going to be a lot of disagreement. I don't really have a problem with that. And, you know, the other thing is, unfortunately, stewards are going to make the wrong call occasionally. They're only human. I'd like to think they don't. I don't generally have a big problem with the decisions our stewards make. Most of the time, I think they fall in line with what they normally do, or, you know, I agree with them. But, you know, every call is the wrong call. I mean, honestly, if they left this horse up, there would have been just as big a furor on Twitter about it. They should have taken him down. So I don't really, you know, I don't pay attention to that.
Good point.
The same things are getting said every time. You know, it's just sometimes a different group of people. Sometimes it's the same group of people. And
you had a great.
I agree with them, but.
You had a great tweet about it the next day, I think, when you said, please stop saying that so-and-so DQ is the worst DQ in history, because there's a Mount Rushmore of the worst DQ in history, and it's not going to ever be replaced.
Oh, Alan Muse, the horse that won by 7 lengths or something, got disqualified, and it was the wrong horse, right? Bailey told him they had the wrong horse, right? Yeah, that was bad. Yeah, that one can't. None of these, when they take the wrong horse down, horse won by 7 lengths, that one sort of stands alone.
Yes.
Yeah, the worst DQ of all time. The worst DQ. There have been a lot of worse. It's like, you know, we make fun of riders for saying it's the best horse I ever rode, or trainers for saying it's the best horse I ever had.
True.
And it's like, yet we do, which much worse, right? The stuff we're doing. I mean, for every time that a rider has said this is the best horse I've ever ridden, there's 10,000 people on Twitter saying every disqualification is the worst one ever. We got a lot of worse. We're just constantly getting worse. And this one wasn't even in the realm of bad DQs. This is one that I think a lot of us were surprised they made. But there was, I don't care who you are, to suggest there's no cause for Vino Rosso to have come down is preposterous.
I agree.
I didn't think that horse would come down. But to say that there was no reason for it to come down is ridiculous.
Yeah,
there was absolutely reason, which is why, you know, and I was glad to hear the owners the next day, you know, the cooler heads provided. They said, you know, prevailed, I should say, and they said, you know, we're going to drop any kind of, you know, appeal. Because, I can understand why Vinny Viola would be, or Mike Rapoli would be frustrated. No question about it. But they weren't going to win an appeal.
No.
Listen, I can understand them being frustrated. Besides, it's just frustrating in any case. And there certainly didn't seem like this one had to come down, right? So I don't think they necessarily expected to come down.
All right, let's shift gears. Let's get, because there's a lot of good things to talk about, and that included an absolutely terrific. I know that having four horses in a field doesn't do anything for anybody, but Imperial Hint and Firenze Fire.
Well, I tell you, their battle for second and third, if Dale had left Promises Fulfilled in there, would have been epic.
Somebody call Dale.
Epic. That filling out that exacta behind Promises Fulfilled. Would that have been a memorable one?
You would have whistled?
I don't know. Imperial Hint would have won that race, in my opinion. I don't know. I'm not sure whose decision it was not to run that race. But I wish them good luck in the Phoenix on Friday.
It was amazing to me. I don't know if you saw it the same way, and you know, being up high may have helped.
I was up high.
Well, it seemed to me the only place that Imperial hit in the late stages was ahead was when they took the photo. It was crazy.
He got the bob before it. No, it got down to a bob situation. The last
boy, oh boy, it looked to me like every single time. I mean, I agree. I mean, I could tell.
The other horse got ahead of him, and he came back.
Yeah, no, it was great. It was great. He's
that was a thrilling race. I agree. It was not the kind of wow performance that Imperial Hint had given under perfect circumstances in the Vanderbilt. I think it shows what perfect circumstances can do, and obviously Imperial Hint ran a better race than Vanderbilt, but, you know, also don't forget that Frenzy Fire, who a lot of us picked, including me, in the Vanderbilt, he got a very foolish ride that day when I dove to the dead rail with him. Not saying he was going to win that race, but it is sort of funny when it becomes a more fair circumstance. And, you know, it was one of those weird circumstances. Did Imperial Hint go too slowly early and allow Frenzy Fire to get into the race so it made it easier for him to engage? I don't know. You know, would he be better off going a little bit quicker and utilizing his speed? I'm not sure. I think Frenzy Fire was ready the whole way. You know, he was on his game. And it was a terrific horse race. It was a good sprint this year. I mean, assuming that, you know, you got Matoli, Imperial Hint, and Chancelot, because I think Chancelot's going to lay that field to waste at Santa Anita this weekend. I'll be very did they make a rider change for him?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'll be very surprised if he's ridden as foolishly as he was last time out. I think they should use his speed, and of course he was also compromised by the rail last time he ran. I'm not dismissing Chancelot. That's going to be one of the better matchups we've had in the sprint in a long time, assuming all three run.
Well, and we got we still have got some decisions.
Can they rename the Santa Anita Sprint Championship back to the ancient title? Why would you change the name of a race that was named for the first cowbred to win $1 million and a truly great horse like Ancient mm-hmm. Title? Well, I understand that brings their mark when they took over the racetrack, but, you know, I'll never understand why the Norfolk became, you know, whatever it was, and now it's the American Pharaoh. What was wrong with the Norfolk? But so it's American Pharaoh, and, you know, you want to celebrate him. I'm not going to bicker about that. But to change a race name from the ancient title to the generic Santa Anita Sprint, don't we have enough? I mean, you know, we could do better with some of those names that we have, I'll give you one, you know, which you
we
were
did.
Involved in, renaming the Belmont Sprint Championships the John Nehrud. Of course, you were very involved in that, you know, we're talking to Martin about that. He was receptive, which was great. But, you know, come on. It was the ancient title. If I were in California, I mean, I'm annoyed by it. And I'm an East Coaster. If I was in California, I'd be really annoyed. I know it seems meaningless, but come on.
No, I agree.
For the past, and that was just unnecessary. You want to change some of the names, that's your decision, you know, but that race should be the ancient title.
Well, I give a dissertation on this every single time it comes up. And one of the most despicable ones it was what went on at Pimlico, where the Chick Lang, you want to name a race after Chick Lang, name the Maryland Sprint Championship after him. You don't pave
right.
over Hirsch Jacobs. I mean,
right.
it's bizarre.
Right.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
It's a frivolous dismissal of history. And, you know, one of the really great things about horse racing is the history of the game.
Yep.
And it doesn't mean we all have to say all the time, you know, this horse, that older horses were better. But I'm not sure why a horse named Ancient Title needed to have, you know, like, okay, I disagree with the notion of renaming the Lady Secret to Zenyatta. Because I think that dismisses, and I know people think it's because I have this dislike of Zenyatta. I think it's a dismissal of one of the great horses of all time, and she ran not that long ago.
Yep.
And for people that saw Zenyatta but didn't see Lady's Secret, they really should get to know what kind of horse she was. And the fact that she lost a number of races was to her credit, because the challenges that she faced week after week. But at least in this case, you were renaming for a horse that was extremely popular. And so I don't, it's just, that's just sort of my opinion on that one. At least it's a horse Zenyatta that was a very popular horse that people could relate to. I don't know why a race needs to be named the Santa Anita Sprint Championship, as opposed, you know, imagine if it had been named Zenyatta and they renamed it the Santa Anita Distaff. People would have flipped out. The reason people didn't flip out as much is that Ancient Title ran 40 years ago. But that doesn't dismiss how good he was. And I'm sure there were a lot of people in California that were very annoyed by that. You know? It continues to annoy me every single year. And I will say, Ancient Title was the first horse I saw win the Whitney in 75 live.
Wow.
So I do have a real appreciation. I loved Ancient Title. So I will admit that in this case, it's a little bit personal. But even if I hadn't, it still would have annoyed me. And it's, you know, it's this, I know there's this notion of East Coast, West Coast bias. I love horse racing. I love good horses wherever they're from. And I really wish that somebody at Santa Anita would correct that. I don't understand why a race has some sort of bang by calling the Santa Anita Sprint Championship.
You know, no, it's ridiculous.
And an East Coast horse is going to be the favorite in it this year, by the way, which makes it even funnier, right?
The other, I can remember on the show years ago, I asked Angel Penna. I said to Angel, I said, does it bother you having the A Phenomenon renamed?
Became the Vanderbilt, right?
Correct.
But Alfred Vanderbilt was a significant player.
So in create race. Create a race for him.
Okay, I know. Listen, I love A Phenom. You know, I loved A Phenom, so I'm not, you know, and I was there when he broke down, unfortunately, in Saratoga, so.
No, and that's why the race was created the next year. Yeah. I mean,
Was it the Boojum that became the A Phenom?
That's a good question, actually.
And was it the Boojum where he broke down?
That's
one
an interesting
or both
question.
Of those may be true, you know.
That's a great question, and I don't remember the Boojum. The Boojum was run up here.
I think it was. I think we moved it eventually. I could be wrong.
Okay.
I wonder if the stakes history lists that.
It does on the Naira. It's more tricky when it comes to things like the like on Equibase, for instance. Like for instance, when you look up the Boojum. Well, Wikipedia. The Naira website's good for that.
Really?
I'll give you one that
I'm joking.
Okay, the Boojum. When you put in the Boojum at Equibase, you get the Forest Hills.
No.
That's interesting. No. It's in itself.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. No,
all right.
So. Well, anything's possible. But
we're gonna we'll go to the map.
I'm gonna try. Right.
While you're doing that, I'll throw out a few other elements of the weekend. Chad Brown sweeping at the 2-year-old turf races. Not that that seems surprising, but.
No, they weren't near one of those favored, so.
Exactly. And Structor was one of those cases, Andy, where, you know, you looked at that maiden win and you said, this horse is better than that. It's a place where numbers didn't do justice.
I explained it pretty carefully on the show.
I missed it. I'm sorry. I wasn't
It originated since the Vanderbilt is the A Phenom in 85.
That's what I thought.
So it maybe was original. That was the year after he wrote down. Because I remember I was there. My friend Toby from college was visiting me in Saratoga with his then girlfriend, and we watched the race. The Structor race, the Structor and the horse who ended up favored, the Todd Pletcher horse, the Fulda Silencio, that didn't run particularly well. They had both run the same day, and the Pletcher horses run significantly faster in mile 16th. But there were two significant differences in the races. One was running the wide, and one was running the inner. And the one on the inner was Structor's, and it had a ridiculously slow pace. And the only other mile 16th race on the inner was the Saranac, which was run 2 1/5 faster, but it also featured a 6-furlong margin that was like 2 3/5 faster. And so structure came home extremely quickly. Now, obviously, it was easy to come home, easier to come home that fast because of the slow pace. But that was a very good dissertation or example of how much pace affects these races and how different the courses can be in those situations. And so Structure's race wasn't nearly, you know, the buyer figures played it straight and they probably shouldn't have, where they were like 60 for Structure and 77 for Todd's horse. And they probably should have been very similar figures. Timeform US had them very similar. I think they had one in 94 and the other 93. I thought that somebody told me the Rags and Sheets had Todd's horse with a 13 and Structure with a 16. So they didn't, I don't know what Thoroughgraph did. But in fact, if you took the races apart, Structure's race was much, much better, which is why I picked him, because A, I didn't think he'd be favored, but not that he ended up being a big price, but B, I didn't, the race was a lot stronger once you take it apart. And he did run well.
Andesite from Brad Cox ran well and
did a good ride, yeah. He had a bad trip in his last race. I think people focus too much in his last race on the trips that Tuggle had as well as the horse of George Weaver's, Our Country.
Well, that horse is a bad actor.
But I have to watch the race again. I only saw it once. Sort of hard.
He's a hard case. Our Country. Yeah, George's son.
I read John Kimmel said that he thought that Cristal would have won in 2 more strides. I'm going to take exception to that. Maybe I misread what John said.
You're talking about the Grillo.
Yeah, I think he was gaining that sharply. I'm not knocking Kristoff. She's good. And I have to watch again. Maybe she did have a tougher trip, but I didn't think that she was eating up ground in that manner. Not like you were screaming wire. If you like the winner. The winner improved a lot selflessly. I had no idea what to expect from her. I mean, she was best in the 5.5-furlong race where she lost to Jazique, who finished, I think, 4th in this race. 3rd or 4th, I don't know, wherever. Because Jazique actually bumped her. And that was something that was missed in the race where there was a disqualification, the 4th horse, but a legitimate disqualification. But she bumped her in the late stages, or I'm not sure that Selvesley wouldn't have won. But, you know, it's hard to be overly excited by that race they came out of. It was a sort of a mediocre 5.5-furlong turf maiden race where the race collapsed at the end. But obviously, particularly, Selvesley improved a lot stretching out her second start.
Couple of other.
She's not nominated for the Breeders' Cup, but she, I guess she's probably going to go anyway.
Well, she's a more than ready, and
other races. What other? Yeah. Midnight Bisou. Not Midnight Bisou's best effort.
She's going to have to. I just had Sheriff's on earlier, and Paradise Woods runs that race again. Midnight Bisou will have her hands full.
Yeah, well, there's other horses, too, but Paradise Woods is a hard horse to see as being consistent, right?
Yes.
Spent more of her career being inconsistent. She's run some terrific races at times, but she's failed to back them up when it really mattered. And I didn't really pay attention to Zenyatta. I guess I should eventually look at it.
She ran good.
In those races eventually. But see, what, she's 5 now?
Yes.
It's a weird career. Listen, she'll have her hands full with Dunbar Road. Dunbar Road will beat her if she runs that way. And you know, she's not run a particularly fast race, not get a good figure. And I didn't think it was one of her prettier efforts. Now, she bounced back from a less than terrific effort in the race at Monmouth with maybe her best effort ever in personal ensign. And her horse at 7 for 7 this year, and she's danced all the dances. She's had a terrific year. She is the third choice right now for Horse of the Year, behind Mattoli and Bricks and Mortar. If there's somebody I'm missing, feel free to fill me in. But I think McKenzie's out of the running after his loss this weekend. I don't care if he wins the Classic. I don't see how he can be Horse of the Year. You know, he's had too spotty a campaign. Even though he ran very well in the Whitney, he has been disappointing other efforts. And he has failed to get it done too many times. I don't know where else you go. I think Mattoli, you know, he had the one loss. He had an excuse that day, but he bounced back from it. If he were to win a sprint, he's had an exceptional year, and this is a weird year where you're not going to see the, you know, it's you're not going to see the usual distance dirt horses as horses that are really in the running. You're not going to make Code of Honor Horse of the Year, and he's apparently not running in the Classic anyhow.
Yeah.
Not a real problem with that. I don't really care. And you know, it's Midnight Visu third. Midnight Visu never stepped out of her division. That's what keeps her from being in the conversation as highly, in my opinion, as the other two. I'm not knocking the year she's had. She's had an incredible year. She really has, and she's been sensational. She's taken on all comers, and she's done it at, what, 5 different racetracks now in 7 starts, and she's been sensational. But she's going to have to run better than she did in the Beldame to win the distaff. She runs well in the Personal Ensign, and she's in the Personal Ensign. She'll probably win it. I know that Mott's talking a lot about running a late in the Classic. I'll be surprised if they end up going there. I guess there's nobody to be afraid of there, but I'd run in the distaff. But, you know, it's okay. Not impossible in either race. Is she really better in a mile and a quarter? I know the Alabama was a breakout performance, but was it really the mile and a quarter that made her so much better? And the Delaware, two races at Delaware, to me, they're not exactly going to say she's much better. And the other thing is, maybe she's just better, you know, that a lot of the fillies and mares she's run against those races weren't really mile and a quarter horses. So the fact that she can run well at it is exacerbated, made it exaggerate her performances or exaggerate the margin.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a great way to look at it.
She probably raced to face some of the guys, boys that want a mile and a quarter, though I'm not really sure. I mean, you know, who's in that race that this is some motley crew for that, the Classic, right? Jeez. And they should all show up in slings or something. I mean, who are the favorites for it?
McKenzie.
Right. You want him in a mile and a quarter off a disappointing loss? Do you use Mongolian Summer one of the favorites?
He has to be supplemented.
Okay. So he's not running.
And no, he might. He might actually. That was
Vino Rosso. Funnier. You really right about Vino Rosso?
Well, Vino Rosso back where
I'm not saying he can't win, but
he ran a huge race in that Hollywood Gold Cup.
He did. I agree. But still, is Giftbox coming back, or is he in the witness protection program?
No, his Giftbox is shelved. Shelved.
Okay.
Shelved. You've got. I don't want to invoke dollar bill conversations.
Does Luch have an entry in there?
listen, Luch got grade one black type for Brown Buckeye in the Vosburgh.
He told me he'd be no worse than second, so he gets no credit from me.
I don't see a Luch horse yet, but
being the operative word. He's definitely under. There's definitely a few under consideration.
What do you do about Preservationist right now?
Suddenly stink on a Saturday.
He was terrible, and it looked like he needed a hip replacement.
He was awful. I don't know. Is Jimmy going to ship him out there?
He wasn't keen. He wasn't.
You know what I do?
Kick him down the door.
The cigar mile, cut it back to a mile.
There, that's you, Mr. Cutback.
Too.
You're the king of cutbacks.
Work for Flat Out.
What do they do with Tacitus? Does he go?
I wouldn't go there, but I would go to the Classic with him. He can't win it. He's bad Saturday. I guess anybody that wants to take a shot in this Classic, why not? It's not like there's any killers, so maybe they should. I don't know. I don't know. It's... You know, when I look back at some of the classics that lacked that verve, you know, like a one that Black Tie Affair won, but Black Tie Affair was a pretty good horse, you know. There's going to be some very good races in the Breeders' Cup. The Classic just won't be one of them. I tell you what's really a shame, that we didn't do that Breeders' Cup Derby idea for the 3-year-olds, because that was one scintillating race this year. Can you imagine? Oh my God.
my God.
You know, that then we'd have to wait another month or so for the Classic. At least in this case, we'll be getting it over with. There will be some really good Breeders' Cup races, just the Classic is not going to be a memorable field. I mean, listen, maybe it'll be a thrilling race, you know?
Well,
maybe
that's
we'll make
that's
a score betting it.
But exactly.
It's not going to be a memorable field, that's for sure. But you know what? This is not this is, by the way, not exactly a surprise, you know? This was a handicap, an older horse division that was, you know, hurting from the start of the year to the end. So, I mean, the truth is, the best older horse race this year is going to be the Met Mile. We started the time, and it's going to prove to be, right? Because you had Mottoli and McKinsey, right? Thunder Snow, who unfortunately, you know, disappeared from the scene. In other words, he promises fulfilled, actually, ran reasonably well in that race, the horse who would have won the Vosburgh. Oh, for their sake, they win the Phoenix. It'd be really a shame to have passed on a grade one. They would have won to lose a grade two. That would be really... I hope that a whole bunch of speed horses don't show up in there. That,
I know.
That overnight... That those PPs should be out any minute, right? Keeneland, they're usually out by like noon.
Yeah, 12:30. Yeah, they will be.
Yeah.
They will be for Friday. Absolutely.
How I envy them.
Well, because then you could start your work. You could get going.
Please.
Well, considering when your post times, what are the post times this week, Andy?
I don't know. We haven't spun the wheel yet, but we're getting there. We're going to figure it out soon. We promise. We're going to get it to you by at least an hour before each day. I think we're going to 1:15.
1:15.
But that's going to depend on how many races we run on Saturday. It'll probably be 12:45 on Saturday. God forbid we just start at 12:45 every day. See, I'm making fun of something we're doing at Naira, so people can say I'm not always just showing everything.
Good, I think good work.
I think the situation is preposterous.
Good
personally.
Work. Too funny.
All right. I've given enough today.
You have.
Who's the next guest? Who's the lucky person to follow me today?
Jimmy Baker.
Oh. I remember Mahogany Hall.
Mahogany Hall?
Who's Mahogany Hall beat when she won the Whitney. She beat an all-time great. I think she beat Serena Song, didn't she? Didn't he? I mean, I think he ran down Serena Song.
Maybe.
Yeah, I would bet money he did.
Look at you. You're usually, I know better than to argue with you on that.
I could be wrong. Fidelity is setting in. But I think I'm right about this one.
Well, Jimmy Baker.
Ask Jimmy. I believe it's on Mahogany Hall, right?
Absolutely, one of my absolute favorites, and you know that
sure.
That first
Jose Santos wrote him that day.
Yes, he did. In fact, I've had that conversation with when I had that long visit with Jose last summer or summer before at Saratoga. We talked about that.
And, I know it because I can still remember hearing Drew Mollick, who was his agent at the time, screaming near me, "Come on, Joe! Come on, Joe!" I can still remember that.
Well, and here you go. Here's the answer. Beat Serena Song a neck.
Yeah, there you go.
Peaks and Valleys. Golden Lunch
was
four.
Peaks and Valleys. I bet you Julie was on Peaks and Valleys.
She sure was.
Yeah, she wrote him. She wrote him. That was Pin Oak, right?
Peaks and Valleys, yes.
Did Mott have him? Did Mott have him? He had a lot of Pin Oaks, but I'm not sure he had Peaks and Valleys.
No, he did. He did have, absolutely did. Then you had Golden Lunch. Who was a nice horse? La Carrière, Mount Sassafras, Pleasant Tango, Pyramid Peak, who did not run well, and Jed Forrest.
John Ward, Pyramid Peak. All right, talk to him. It was really great spending this time with you and your listeners, and I'll talk to you soon.
A vintage Andy Serling performance, everybody. Andy Serling back tomorrow at beautiful Belmont Park. Let's take a break after that. That frivolity. That was great. Jimmy Baker. Spectacular gem. And yes, you're going to hear me bemoan the fact that after complaining about the disqualification for a week, I managed to not bet. Spectacular gem. Part of it was getting late and I was getting a little logy. I mean, the race didn't go off to what? 10:20? What time did that race go off? I'll tell you right away. Race went off. Well, it says 9:39. Felt like 10:20. Jimmy Baker joins us next. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horseville.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horseville.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horseville.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horseville.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the sun on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood fraternities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a grade one race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I thought I saw you in the battleship, but it was only a lookalike. Was nothing but a vision trick. Under the warning light, she was close, close enough to be your ghost. But my chances turned to toast when I asked her if I could call her your name.
We're back at the races, 10 minutes to the top of the hour. John White's going to join us in a little bit. We'll talk more about the West Coast action. But at Churchill on Saturday night, the Jefferson Cup for the three-year-olds. Another opportunity for restricted company at the mile and the eighth. And here was spectacular Jem coming back out of that disqualification situation in Indiana that we talked so much about. And Jimmy, I'll be kicking myself for months. I didn't bet. Unbelievable. All he did was go out. You took the blinkers off, and yet he still goes to the front, was as relaxed as can be. He ran even better winning the Jeff Cup than he did winning the Caesars. Congratulations to you and Candy.
Well, thank you. It was a really awesome day for us. You know, it's what we worked our whole life for, to get horses like this. And, yeah, the blinkers off because of the fact that the mile race, he ran super. Declan did a great job of slowing the pace down. He went 24:49 and barely held on to win. And I said, oh, my God, the next race is a mile and eighth. How do we get him to go eighth a mile further? And I thought, well, I guess now it's time to take the blinkers off because to get that extra eighth a mile, I think he's going to have to relax more than he did last time. and it worked out for us. And I thought back last winter in New Orleans, I called him my wonder horse because the first time we put him on the grass, he just galloped, but it was first time grass, first time blinkers. So I didn't know what it was or both. So but after that, I thought, well, one of these days we'll take the blinkers off, but not right now. So Saturday was the night.
And, you know, you find out a lot of things about this horse, including, let's talk about the breeding aspect and the purchase of him and then his development, because you bought him for 20. He's by Can the Man. He's out of a Malabar Gold mare. I mean, this is a kind of an unusual page, and you bought him as a yearling. What did you like about him, and when did he go? How late in the sale?
You know, it was probably like on the last Friday, I believe it was. It was towards very, very much towards the end. And my wife had looked at all the books, and she was trying to buy a colt. And every horse we picked out was selling way beyond our means. And she can't make it to sales because she works hard. So we just kept texting each other, what about this one? What about that one? What about this one? And this number come up, she said, look at this one. And I loved him, the way he looked. He's just really athletic-looking horse. And we got lucky to buy him.
Unbelievable. Ledgelands was the consigner. He was hip 35-34.
Okay.
So probably book five. And
right.
What a terrific buy. And then what do you do with a horse like this? Do you handle him, or do you send him to somebody to get started?
Well, what I've done lately, you know, I used to send him to Ocala, but lately I've just been keeping him locally. There's a place out in Prospect, Kentucky, actually LaGrange, Kentucky, called LaCroix Farms. And we break them, turn them out, and send them when the weather breaks around 1st of February out there. And they handle them for 60 or 90 days till I get back from New Orleans. And then I take over from there.
Well, from that point, let's pick up the story here and talk about him debuting for $30,000. And that came at Ellis last Labor Day weekend, right at the end of the meet. He wins at first asking, going six on the dirt. And it seemed like it took a while, you know, for him to kind of, you know, gain some traction. But you protected him from that point on.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't sure what we had. You know, his workouts were just average, but he was doing it well. And, you know, Ellis Park is not like it used to be. There's some pretty nice horses that run down there now. I mean, look at the horse of Dale Roman's that broke his maiden down there this summer.
Yeah.
So I said, let's avoid this maiden special weight race. I probably would have run him for 50, but they don't have the maiden 50 at Ellis. So 30 was the only option. And we put him in there, and it worked out for us.
Well, you also took advantage of the Morales kid, the 5-pound bug boy, and then
right.
you started to stretch him out. You ran him at Keeneland against some heavy heads, and he ran into some good horses actually along the way, including Preamble. Yeah,
he's running against some pretty nice horses. I mean, everything that he's run against have come back and won. He actually run against Owendale in one of those lounge races in New Orleans this winter. I think that was the first time long. And Owendale was second or third, I believe, wasn't he?
Second, behind Tackett.
Second, yeah. Right, exactly. So, you know, it just shows you that he runs with pretty good company.
What's also amazing is despite even after he won that allowance race, first time turf at Fairgrounds, he was 18, almost 19-1 that day. This is a horse that now has 3 wins and 11 starts, a second and 3/3. He's never been favored. He's never been close to favored.
I know, but he's a little guy that doesn't get any respect.
It's crazy.
All my buddies like him because they all bet on him. You know, I got a lot of friends that love to gamble, so they have fun betting on him, and he runs.
Well, that $75 tote at Indiana, Take us back here, Jimmy. I mean, you and I texted back and forth afterward for a day and a half, and I mean, it, to me, it was just heartbreaking. A $120,000, you know, win tote to pay to, you know, win check taken away from you and Candy. And that you have to wonder to yourself, are we going to get a chance to win a race like this, you know, anytime soon? And the answer ended up being yes.
Right, exactly. But, you know, and we had to find out the photo first. I mean, he barely won the race.
That's true.
And then when he put his number up, then I saw the inquiry sign, and then heard his double inquiry. I was like, oh, my God, this is crazy. And I just, you know, anybody, when it takes a long time for the stewards to decide, 9 times out of 10, you're coming down. And I know the horse did come out, but it was right at the wire. And the first thing I did was I asked Declan. I said, Declan, this inquiry, are you okay? He said, Jimmy, it was at the wire. There's no way. There's nothing that, you know, he won fair and square, he said. And, you know, we both waited at the same time. And when they took our number down, we both just walked away with our heads down. And there's nothing you can do. And I was driving, you know, I took the horse up to myself, my truck and trailer, and I was driving back. And I thought, what in the world just happened? And the way I said, I'm going to look at it is like, it's money I never had. Be positive. You know, the horse thought he won. The horse came back great. You know, he cooled out good, and everything was fantastic with him. And I said, well, that's the main thing. We still have the horse, and hopefully we'll make amends. And, you know, we sure did Saturday night, and that felt good to have him come back and run like that, because he just proved that he's a good horse.
Well, this check, $76,000 to the winner out of this, so you've only got about $20,000 to make up somewhere. That I'm sure the Candy's gonna to keep you pointed in that direction.
Yeah, you know, because we just bought a yearling this year again, another colt, but we got partners this year, so we stepped a little larger. We paid $75,000 for this one, so you know, we need money to keep things going.
And isn't that really the definition of this game? You know, you think, well, we got this nice winner, and we got this check, and but it's already spent. The money's already.
Yeah, people don't realize they think you're getting rich. You're not. You're just paying other bills. You know, you got to pay the feed man. You got to pay insurance. You know, you got to pay for this fetch, blacksmith. You know, nothing's cheap with the horses.
Well, it's got to feel good to have this horse come right back and run another career top, and you know, take another step forward. And also, when you take the blinkers off and he runs like that, you get some confidence that the horse is maturing too. That he's.
I think you know we gave him a little time off this summer, and you know, that was by design, because I knew all these races, 3-year-olds early in the year and all summer long, they're so tough. I thought, well, let's, you know, freshen them up. And let's try and hit them some of his easier spots in the fall. And that seems to have worked out really good for us, because there's two more races we can run them in against the straight 3-year-olds, which is the Commonwealth at Churchill in November and then the Woodchopper in December at Fairgrounds.
How about distance with him now? Because Woodchopper's shorter, right?
I'm pretty sure Woodchopper's only a mile.
Seven and a half, I think, right? About 7.5?
Oh, yeah. Maybe. I don't know. It used to be a mile.
Mile? Yeah. Okay.
But still, 7.5 is 2 turns down there. So,
yes.
So, you know, I could mess around with maybe put the blinkers back on them. You know, who knows? But I'll see. Next start, for sure, we're going to keep the blinkers off on the Commonwealth, and we'll decide from there, you know, what we're going to do in the Woodchopper. When and if we get that far.
Well, James Graham got back aboard in here, and you know, not that Declan, you know, didn't ride him well in Indiana.
No, he did. He did everything perfect. It's just, you know, you get caught up in the moment. He was just riding hard to win the race. The horse ducked out. You know, if he had stopped hitting them left-handed, maybe it would have been different. Maybe not. I don't know. But you know, the stewards, that's the way they looked at it, I guess. He just never stopped hitting them left-handed. So.
Well, the wind clear. He really never challenge. Nobody really got to him, and certainly Tracksmith. We happened to have talked to Joe Sharp last week, you know, after his Charlestown Oaks win, and uh-huh. we knew Tracksmith was headed here, and he was coming out of the Virginia Derby, and you know, it really feels, Jimmy, like you got something nice, you know, going as you mentioned, Commonwealth and Woodchopper, and then the New Orleans, you know, older horse turf division, and you know, distance as a horse matures. I mean, how far do you think he's able to go as he gets older?
I really don't know, but you know, they came to him the other night and he drew off again. So I could think he could probably go a little further. Now, and the pace was definitely not easy. He went 23-1, 47-1, 47-2. That's a pretty solid pace. So, you know, when it's through the first quarter of 23-1, I told my wife, I said, we're done. She said, don't give up.
And this has got to be, just thinking, this has got to be one of the best turf, it feels like one of the you know, the turf horses that you've had with the most potential.
It's been a while. You know, I've had some nice turf fillies in the past, but it's been a long time since I've had a nice horse like this.
Well, and I think back to some recent vintage, the last few years. I mean, we used to talk about Elite Squadron, right? And
right.
Pretty prolific few years back, but this one, this feels like a horse, and he's a colt. You didn't have to.
Didn't have to geld him because he's mild mannered and not hard to train. You know, so you know, he could work out for a stallion somebody somewhere. You know, Louisiana or Indiana or someplace like that. You know, so
well,
have to see how he, you know, if he can keep moving up. Somebody might want him somewhere.
Well, the stallion, Can the Man, is an into mischief. So it's the young, the fairly young line. And this wasn't a graded stake. It used to be a grade three, right? The Jefferson Cup. Didn't it used to be grade three?
No, it used to be right. When he ran in the spring, it used to be right. But now it's just listed. Yeah,
it's a listed stake, so it's not the first graded stake winner for Can the Man, but it feels like he's one of the first important horses for Can the Man, and this is his first. These are his 3 year olds are his first crop, so it comes at a good time for the young spendthrift stallion, who is a relative bargain.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure that there's a few more out there that are doing okay, you know, but I don't know how many mares he got in poll with. You know, that's the thing. How many are they out? You need numbers, you know, like in the Bishop, he's got a lot of numbers out there. So
that he's got the most numbers.
he's unbelievable.
I
claimed one at Ellis Park this summer for $30,000. Maiden claim, and he ran third and running back of Maiden Special Weight. He won. So we got out on him in first crack.
Look at you. What's that? What's that horse's name?
Early Mischief.
That's a good name.
Yeah. So we're running back to Keeneland middle October.
Well, and on that topic, there he is, Early Mischief. Look at that. August at Ellis on the 17th. And in fact, that was actually, it's interesting, Spectacular Gem had run like a week and a half earlier. Looking out, Midwest Justice, also a summer, late June winner, and you're picking your spots. Any other babies that we're going to see yet?
You know, I've got some local guys that bred to Tom's last general. In fact, I'm sorry, not Tom's, General Quarters. Tom McCarthy's two sons, Tim and Tom, and a partner of those, Jerry. We've got a filly that's by General Quarters, and she should be ready to run in November. And she acts like she could be any kind of horse.
What's the name?
Lucky Quarters.
Oh, that's a good name too.
Yeah.
Well, and it's great.
Big, strong, snapping filly.
I love it. And the fact that the late Mr. McCarthy That's nice that, his sons are, staying in the
game. Yeah, exactly. You know, they're great people. They're really, really great people to be around.
Well, and, who is it, that's got a good general quarters? Might be
Signalman, Kenny Peak, yes.
Yeah, right? That's what I thought.
Yeah, he won the Jockey Club last year. Ran in the Breeders' Cup, third the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, so they're in a, from limited opportunity, he got you know, he got some horses.
Right, well, cool. He's overseas now, so he only had a couple crops out there. So
then hope it'd make a good story too. With the
it
sons.
Would, yeah, it sure would. Yes.
Well, it's always a good story when you win, and one of the people that around the game that everybody roots for. Jimmy, just absolutely delighted. Andy Serling was on with me right before you, and as he was wrapping up, he said, "Who might who's on next?" And I said, "Jimmy Baker," and of course, you know, right to Mahogany Hall we went. And,
that was a pretty fun horse to have too.
Well, that was a great day. The 96 Whitney day. Winner.
Yeah, he went through a lot. That horse, you know. To, I think every time I run him three or four times, he would get hurt and have to give him a break. I run him four more times, get hurt, have to give him a break. But it paid off.
How old was he when he won the Whitney?
He was five.
He was a five-year-old.
Because he ran the Derby in 94.
How about that?
And I think we ran him two or three times after the Whitney, and that was it. He got retired after that.
Who owned
Robert Holweller. Robert Holweller, Woodland Farms, and he actually got out of the business, sold his farm, and got out of the business.
Well, he won a Whitney. Usually, that keeps you in the business. You win a race like the Whitney, you double down.
Yeah. Well, you know, he had some success. He bred and sold more than ready.
Okay. Well, that's a lasting legacy too.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, I guess he just got into different other things and just kind of got away. He still owns horses every now and then. I had a horse for him 2 years ago, but he's so, you know, he just doesn't breed anymore. So he'll buy a piece of one or part of one, but the breeding operation's gone.
Well, certainly. And he was a homebred Mahogany Hall of his?
No, actually, he was a yearling purchase. He had sold a filly early that day for a good bit of money. It's like $250 or $300. And he said if she sold good, he might buy something. And another client I trained for turned me on to Mahogany Hall. I said, go look at that Woodman colt that Burton Jones is selling. I went down there, loved him, took Bob back down there and showed him. He liked him. He had the farm manager look at him. He liked him. And we bought him for $120,000.
How about that?
Yeah.
How about that? There you go. It doesn't. I always love that too. I always ask that kind of question because the stories are just so.
Know. I mean, you gotta be in the right place, at the right time. We had almost bought a filly before we bought Spectacular Jim, and I think we were underbidders, like 21,000. I think she sold for 22, and my last bid was 21. And if I'd have got her, she wound up breaking a maiden for maiden 10. I wouldn't have bought Spectacular Gem.
Unbelievable. That's what this is. That's it's serendipitous, to say the least. But
we're not all geniuses. We got to be lucky sometime, right?
You bet. That's the key. That's why. That's a big part of it. And then there's people that just. That just seem to be walking around lucky, Jim. I mean, that's the other thing.
Oh, yeah.
Other times you got to work at it. One thing's for sure: if there's some talent in that body and in that mind of the horse, you'll extract it and get a good result. And Spectacular Jim, the latest example. Well done.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you very much,
Jimmy Baker, everybody. And he's heading off to play some golf. Why not? Who are you playing with?
Yeah, actually, Nathan Little. You know Nathan Little?
I know the name.
He does a little bit. Kentucky Winner's Circle.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We're heading out to Bardstown. Maywood Country Club, we're playing at today.
All right. Well, keep it in the fairway.
All right.
Jimmy Baker, everybody. Spectacular Jim. And he's coming back for the Commonwealth at Churchill when they swing back after Keeneland. And watch out, because Jimmy will keep ratcheting him up. This was a defining, I think maybe a defining win. Stretching out from a mile to a mile and an eighth. Blinkers off. And he won like a champ. And I don't think we're getting $20 again anytime soon. But the lowest price this horse has ever been has been 7-2. Almost 4-1. It's amazing, actually. And when he's won, of course, he would have been 36-1 had he stayed up in the Caesars DQ. Before that, he was 19-1 in the allowance win at Fairgrounds. He was 11-1 when he broke his maiden. Just one of those horses that's always a price. It just happens. You know, so it does happen. Back after this, top of hour three, little past. I was really looking forward to having Jimmy on. Chuck, when we, that summer of, what was it, 07? When Chuck, when we had Someone Loves You, Jimmy Baker was stable next to Chuck. That was my first chance to get to know Jimmy Baker, one of the most respected and well-liked horsemen out there. Back after this, John White swings in. We'll get some first weekend conversation from John, see what he was impressed with. Maybe look ahead a little bit to week two. I didn't even talk with Andy about Champagne and Hill Prince and everything else. We were all over the place. Back after this with John.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races. I'll give you a hot topic. Coming back from Massachusetts, from the Big E on Sunday, I'll tell the story quickly. I think John White's joining us. We're on the way back, and I wanted to go. I don't know maybe 3 years ago. I don't know if I ever told anybody that I've related this. Tina and I were driving back up the Taconic and from downstate, and we got off, or maybe it was on our way to the Taconic. We noticed a big field of enormous sunflowers a few years ago, and so I kind of we made like a mental note, and then later on. When we were coming back, I think, up the Taconic, either that same weekend or a weekend or two later, we wanted to drive by there and stop. So we did. And I got a picture of Tina with these giant sunflowers. I mean, they were enormous, like the size of a garbage can lid. And right next to it was this orchard like stand. So we wander into the orchard stand. And the place is called Green Acres, which is funny in and of itself. And they had pies that looked unbelievable. So we got a Dutch apple and took it home, and it was out of this world. And so like the last three falls, I keep saying, you know, we got to go to that Green Acres again. And I've driven by there actually during the off season. They're only open like from the end of July to the beginning of October. They're only open like 60 days. Like a seasonal thing. You know, it's an orchard. So as we're coming back from Massachusetts, I said to Tina, let's swing by Green Acres. So we swing by, and it just so happened we got there about 10 minutes. The pies come out every like 25 minutes. They're constantly baking them, and then people line up for the pies. And they only make like three apple, three Dutch apple, three blueberry, three strawberry rhubarb. They I don't know, they make like maybe two dozen at a time. And then they go through the line. They say, what do you want? What do you want? What do you want? And they start marking them down. And they're like, fights are going to start breaking out in the line. Because if somebody in front of you, if let's say you're fifth in line, and somebody takes the two Dutch apples or the three Dutch apples, now you're forced to pick from whatever's left. So, you know, there's people like people ready to start, you know, start brawling, you know, and you're holding your breath. All right. Good there. And you only get to take two pies. You can only take two pies. You can't like clean them out. So the first two, we were like fourth in line. And so the first two people took blueberry. We're like, okay, good. All right, clear. We're good. Then the next person took a peach and a strawberry rhubarb. There's obviously something wrong with those people. And then the next woman, she wanted blueberry. And the blueberries were gone. So now she's getting all hits and all pissed off. So ultimately, I forget what she took, but she didn't take a Dutch apple either. So it came to us, and we were only going to get one. And I said, we'll take two Dutch apple. And we ran out of there like thieves. We gave our neighbors one of the other ones. The pie is just great. It's in, I want to say, Livingston, New York. But we drove, we had to swing down the Taconic. Teen is just giving me a hard time the entire way from the Mass Pike to this place. I can't believe we're driving 25 minutes out of our way for a pie. Yeah, you know, she doesn't appreciate it. And then she took a bite of the pie when we got home. And the pies were still hot in the car. So they're filling up the car with that smell. And then she said it was worth it. It was definitely worth it. So Green Acres, there you go. The place to be. Farm living. The life for me.